Welcome everyone to Satsang. And I always welcome everyone as my guru Baba Muktananda used to by saying in Hindi, Sabko Bhare Sanmani Ke Saat Prem Se Radik Swagat. With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And we always say that's the essence of spirituality, welcome another person with love. Well, last week I did I looked at the Yoga Vasishta, one of the great scriptures, and I'm so intoxicated with it that I'm doing Yoga Vasishta 2 this week, and I love it so much I want to keep going with it, but I won't. So I'll do the next Yoga Vasishta probably when we get back from India, but I'll do it soon. So the Yoga Vasishta is a great text, medieval text, a wisdom text, most unusual. And so it's the teaching of Vasishta, a great sage, to the young avatar Lord Ram. And here you see Vasishta explaining to Ram how to use Google Maps. And they didn't even exist then, so you can imagine how profound a teaching that was. And go on. And there's another picture of them. Okay. Jewish like that. And a picture, you have Ram? There's Lord Ram, the hero of the Ramayana. He was an incarnation. Vaishnavism has 9 incarnations of God. These are God coming to earth and taking human form for the sake of humanity. The idea of the incarnation is in every religion. I mean, Christianity, obviously, in Judaism, it's in... and so they have 9, and you know how many have come so far? You know?
8.
8 have come. 1 is left. Trump, did you say?
The Kalki.
Huh? Kalki avatar. The Kalki avatar, the last one. So let's hope he gets here soon before the 2020 elections in the States. Right? So, the Yoga Vasishta, as I said last time, it's placed somewhere between the 8th and the 11th century. It's a most extraordinary, profound work of philosophy, which says that the mind alone, everything exists in the mind. And if you understand that, then nothing will make you worry, because everything exists within the mind, and you can also overcome all past karmas, past tendencies, past hurts, because you realize everything's in the mind, and you attain great peace. The main struggle is between the self, the knowledge of the self, and our tendencies towards negativity and anger and fear and so on, and that's a battle that we must win, we have to win. And also, one of the features are wonderful, extraordinary stories. I call them psychedelic stories because they span many lifetimes and they show how a soul unfolds in time and then eventually sees that everything is held, everything is part of one consciousness. And when they finally grasp that, they become to liberation, freedom. It also stresses self-inquiry. So, of course, I'm going to like that. And the main teaching that Baba used to give, he used to say, Ya Drishti Sa Srishti. Yoga Vasishta says, Ya Drishti Sa Srishti. As the sight, so the world. The world is as you see it. That we think we see the world as it is, but we see it filtered through our feelings and our understanding. and therefore we're not really objective, but we're projecting on it our own tendencies. And once you see that, you can free yourself from that. So this is the Yoga Vasishta. While I was, this week I was looking at some stuff that I'm going to, material for India, which is Baba material. And I came to a question answer which Baba talks about the Yoga Vasishta. And I thought, I'm going to put that into the program. So at the end, we'll finish with that. And he includes one of the psychedelic stories, so we'll get to that. But last time we found the narrative, the story of the Yoga Vasishta is the teaching, the wisdom teaching of the sage Vasishta to Lord Ram, a young Lord Ram. And last week we saw that Lord Ram is a prince. He has glorious future, he's a great avatar and all, but he's not self-realized yet. He still has to learn and grow. And he went around the kingdom and he got depressed seeing all the misery. I think there's a strong Buddhist influence. The Buddha is the story of a young nobleman who has everything, who finally sees that life is full of suffering. And then he decides that it's not good enough just to live on his good karma, on his wealth and his power and all that stuff, but he has to go find out what's the meaning of life. And so Ram, it's the same. Ram went around the kingdom and he saw a lot of suffering, old age, disease, and death is what the Buddha would say. And he went into a profound despair, which lasted many pages. We would call it a long whinge. And at the end of his long whinge, all the sages in the court applauded. What a whinge, they said. What a great whinge. You are a sensitive soul. And then Ram turned to Vasishta and asked for teachings. And Vasishta, then the Yoga Vasishta is the teaching that that Vasishta gave to Ram. So here we go. Vasishta says to Ram, "O Ram, the omnipresent omniscience, which is the cosmic being, shines eternally in all beings." So this is God or Supreme Consciousness. He calls it the omnipresent. What is that? It's everywhere. And omniscient knows everything. So it covers all of matter and consciousness. It knows and it is everywhere. This is what I define Supreme Consciousness, that which is everywhere and knows everything. It shines eternally in all beings. And this is the teaching of the Vedas, that the self exists perfectly within every one of us. The soul exists perfectly in every one of us, although perhaps hidden. In fact, definitely hidden. He goes on, he says, "When a vibration arose in that cosmic being," so imagine this ocean of pure consciousness, which is everywhere, still, a still shining consciousness full of bliss and joy and love and peace, and then a vibration arose in that, an agitation, a disturbance, and then Brahma the Creator was born. So God in form came out of that. This is a creation myth. Brahma began to create the countless varieties of animate and inanimate, sentient and insentient beings in the universe. And the universe was as it was before the cosmic dissolution. So the notion is that the universes are created, sustained, and destroyed. They sleep for a while, then they come back, and you have endless cycle of universes. Brahma is the form that then gives rise to everything else. The Creator, that would be Brahma, saw that all living beings in the universe were subject to disease and death, a Buddhist echo, isn't it? To pain and suffering. In his heart there arose compassion, and he sought to lay down a path that might lead living beings away from all this. The Buddha also said there's suffering, but suffering can be overcome by means of the path of yoga, the path of knowledge, the path of wisdom and meditation. So he says he laid down a path that might lead beings away from all this. He thereupon instituted centers of pilgrimage, so places, holy places you could visit, noble virtues like austerity, charity, truthfulness, and righteous conduct. So there were places you could visit, and then behaviors that you could adopt that would lead you to more peace. But these were inadequate, he says, Vasishtha. They could bestow only temporary relief from suffering and not final liberation from sorrow. So what's missing? You've got places to visit. You've got all the good yogic qualities. Reflecting thus, the Creator brought me into being. This is Vasishtha. Is he talking personally? No. He's saying he brought the guru principle, the cosmic principle of the guru. He drew me to himself and drew the veil of ignorance over my heart. Instantly, I forgot my identity and my self-nature. So he takes the Adi Guru and he makes him ignorant. I was miserable. I begged of Brahma, the Creator, my own father, to show me the way out of this misery. Sunk in my misery, I was unable and unwilling to do anything, and I remained lazy and inactive. So he recapitulates what we go through. We become inert and despairing, miserable, tamasic lumps. In response to my prayer, my father, Brahma the Creator, revealed to me the true knowledge which instantly dispelled the veil of ignorance that he himself had spread over me. So he gave him Shaktipat, he gave him the awakening. He, in the formula, like, you are that, he showed him that he was the self. The Creator then said to me, my son, lovely story, isn't it? I veiled the knowledge and revealed it to you so that you may experience its glory. For only then will you be able to understand the travail of ignorant beings and to help them. So in a way, the guru had to become limited like a human being and in suffering and in ignorance to gain that compassion and insight so he can understand where we are and then be helpful. And Vasishtha goes on, Ram, equipped with this knowledge, I am here and I will continue to be here till the end of creation. And he continues. You like that? Mm-hmm. He's speaking from the office, ex officio. So Vasishtha says, even so, in every age, the Creator wills into being several sages and myself for the spiritual enlightenment of all. And Bhagavad Gita says this too, and it's a marvelous thing. And it's this knowledge that I received when I met Ramdas in Chicago in 1970, that these beings exist in every age. The world is never absent of these beings. And although in some of our religions we're told how rare it is, the fact is God is much more compassionate, and there are always great beings on earth if you have the interest. And the vast minority has any interest in it, but those who do can find these beings. So these, myself and several sages, and in order to ensure the due performance, so not only are gurus, sages, realized beings around, there's another thing he does. Brahma also creates kings in order to ensure the due performance of secular duties, he says. Brahma also creates kings who rule justly and wisely over parts of the earth. So in the Hindu myth, there was a golden age in which everyone was wise, everyone was well-behaved, the sages were honored, the kings were just and fair-minded, everything lived in harmony. But that was long ago. And it's not now, and it's not here. It's in America. Anyway, so here's what happened to them. These kings, however, are soon corrupted by lust for power and pleasure. Conflict of interests led to wars among them, which in turn gave rise to remorse. To remove their ignorance, the sages used to impart spiritual wisdom to them. In days of yore, O Ram, kings used to receive this wisdom and cherish it. Hence it was known as Raja Vidya, kingly science. Kingly and Vidya knowledge, the knowledge of the kings, Raja Yoga. So it's saying that in the Golden Age, the Brahmins taught the Kshatriyas, the sages taught the kings, and the kings listened to the sages. It's not the case now. As long as the highest wisdom does not dawn in the heart, the person revolves in this wheel of birth and death. Pray listen to my exposition of this wisdom with a concentrated mind. So according to the Hindu myth, we're born and reborn over and over and over again until we come to this wisdom. We're born to learn certain lessons. In each birth, different situation evolves and a certain part of our being is worked on in that particular life situation. And then we're reborn another situation until finally, somewhere many lifetimes in, we discover that the name of the game is to know the self. And then we seek a teacher and then we pursue that path. And then we're freed from that wheel. Then we go to a beautiful resort. And we hang out. And we help humanity from a far distance while drinking iced tea. So, he says, this wisdom destroys the forest of ignorance. Roaming in this forest, one undergoes confusion and seemingly interminable suffering. One should therefore approach an enlightened teacher and by asking the right question with the right attitude, elicit the teaching. It then becomes an integral part of one's being. The fool asks irrelevant questions irreverently. And the greater fool is he who spurns the sage's wisdom. A lot of fools spurn the sage's wisdom. It happens all the time. He is surely not a sage who responds to the vain questions of a foolish questioner. O Ram, you are indeed the best among all seekers, for you have duly reflected over the truth and are inspired by the best form of dispassion. And I'm sure that what I'm going to say to you will find a firm seat in your heart. You could say he's buttering him up. So you're the best, and you're going to really listen and be a very good student and understand this. But it's also true that Ram's very noble, he's an incarnation, so he'll absorb it. Indeed, one should positively strive to enthrone wisdom in one's heart, for the mind is unsteady like a monkey, and one should then avoid unwise company. So we should have the desire to know the wisdom of the self in the heart, and avoid company that militates against that. So that kind of associations that pull us away from the self. So the company that moves us towards that is called satsang. That's the company of the truth. And satsang, what we do here every week is to celebrate this possibility, don't we? That's all we talk about. That's why we come together. So that's good. Then asatsang would be the company of the untruth, which is a lot of company that we have. So keep coming to satsang. He says, Ram, there are four gatekeepers at the entrance to the realm of freedom, moksha. Four gatekeepers. So these are four things that you need to enter this world. We're not going to be able to get into them all today, but I'm going to list them, and then in future sessions. Okay, you want to imagine what they are? A Visa card? What else? All right. Self-control. Spirit of inquiry. Contentment. And good company. Those are the four things. You have to have satsang. You have to hang out with fellow seekers. I'm not going to go into them now, but we will. The wise seeker should diligently cultivate the friendship of these, or at least one of them. Or at least one of them. So if you can't do anything worthwhile, come to satsang. That's good enough. Vasishtha says, with a pure heart and a receptive mind and without the veil of doubt and the restlessness of the mind, listen to the exposition of the nature and the means of liberation. O Ram, not until the Supreme Being is realized will the dreadful miseries of birth and death come to an end. All the suffering that we have in life, only when we fully establish in the self will it be overcome. If this deadly serpent known as ignorant life is not overcome here and now, it gives rise to interminable suffering, not only in this but in countless lifetimes to come. One cannot ignore this suffering, but one should overcome it by means of the wisdom I shall impart to you. So I think a lot of people are aware of the suffering of life, and they try to ignore it through drugs, alcohol, and so on. That's a denial to dull themselves, to turn away from it. He's saying, face it, and you can overcome it through yoga, through wisdom. He says, O Ram, if you thus overcome this sorrow, and the translation is the sorrow of repetitive history, which is a translation of samsara, which is the material world or the illusion of the external world. You will live here on earth like a god. If you can overcome this illusion, whatever this illusion is, you'll live here like a god, like Brahma or Vishnu. For when delusion is gone and the truth is realized by means of inquiry into the self, when the mind is at peace and the heart leaps to the supreme truth, when all the disturbing thought waves in the mind have subsided and there is an unbroken flow of peace and the heart is filled with the bliss of the absolute, when thus the truth has been seen in the heart, then this very world becomes an abode of bliss. So the solution to the problem of the world is to work on your inner state and attain a place where everything is bliss and joy. And is it possible to attain that state? Well, as you practice, as you meditate, you cultivate that state, and you have moments where you see that it's absolutely true. When you're in that state of love and that state of connectedness, the whole world is fine and beautiful. And then agitation comes in your mind and everything is miserable. So Yoga Vishnu says, cultivate it within and you'll have it. What does he say? When the mind is at peace, imagine your mind is at peace, okay? I'm willing it. Do you agree? Okay, my mind is at peace. It can be agitated later. You get it back, don't worry. The heart leaps to the supreme truth. All the disturbing thought waves in the mind have subsided. And there's an unbroken flow of peace. And the heart is filled with the bliss of the absolute. When the truth has been seen in the heart, then this very world becomes an abode of bliss. All those great statues of the Buddha that you see, the picture of the statue of Bhagavan Nityananda, the picture of the great yogis, like this, they're symbols of the mind at peace and the heart full of love and full of joy. So sit like that for a moment, become part of that. In Zen they say you participate in the Buddha when you sit like that. And it's well within our reach. Honestly, it's well within our reach. We have to just give it some attention. And we can attain that. We can calm the mind and open the heart and feel that peace and bliss. Vasishtha says, such a person, one who's attained that, has nothing to acquire nor anything to shun. He's untainted by the defects of life, untouched by its sorrow. He's not affected by the past tendencies which have lost their momentum. They're still around, but they're not overwhelming him. His mind has given up its restlessness, and he rests in the bliss that is his essential nature. That's the koan. The yogis say that our essential nature is bliss and peace, and yet we're very far from that. But is it true? If our essential nature is bliss and peace, who wouldn't want to try to get to it? And that's what they say, do it. Such bliss is possible only by self-knowledge, not by any other means. Hence one should apply oneself constantly to self-knowledge. This alone is one's duty. Is it inspiring? I find it tremendously inspiring. I've decided to take up yoga, reading that. What do you think? Will you join me? Yeah. Yeah, I like it. I like it, I'm gonna do it. No? He who disregards holy scriptures and holy men does not attain self-knowledge. Such foolishness is more harmful than all the illnesses that one is subject to in this world. Hence one should devoutly listen to this scripture which leads one to self-knowledge. He who obtains this scripture does not again fall into the blind well of ignorance. O Ram, if you want to free yourself from the sorrow of samsara, receive the wholesome instruction of sages like me and be free. I love that. So now he goes on to talk about the four: self-control, inquiry, contentment, and good company. And for that discussion, you'll have to wait till the next charming chapter of the Yoga Vasishtha. But it's pretty wonderful. Isn't it a great source? You can tell that this comes from some supernatural, profound source. But instead, I'm going to go to Baba, who was an incarnation of that same Vasishtha. When I met Baba, I thought, this is like that. He's one of these ancient Vedic sages. I couldn't believe my eyes. What an extraordinary being. Everything he did radiated that love and that shakti and that wisdom. And so here's a question which refers to the Yoga Vasishtha. This from an American woman I knew very well named Kalyani. She says, what is the karma that draws members of a family together? And how does that debt affect one's sadhana? So she's worried about her family relations in regard to her spiritual life, I guess. That's an interesting question about how families come together. Ready? Baba, it's true that it is past impressions which unite people in one family. One may or may not accept it, but it's God's absolutely true law. God's dispensation is such that the soul has existed from time without beginning, and the soul has connections with all the different worlds. This is pretty psychedelic, isn't it? You're connected. Here, wait. It has connections with every particle of matter in the universe. Your soul is connected with every particle of matter in the universe. Whoa. In the 60s, would have said, whoa, man, far out. Man, this dude is cool. It is past karma which brings people together in the form of a family and unites them with the bond of affection. But that lasts only as long as the karma lasts. If you look at it from the point of view of the self, you'll realize that all of us form one family, all of us, Because in the beginning there was only the one self who assumed countless forms. The poet Saint Krishna Sutta says, the world may appear to be varied and manifold, yet the self is one. Baba says, the connection between different members of one family is rooted in some past life. It's because of the force of past connections that different members of a family offer themselves to each other in love and affection. There is one very important scripture in our country called... called Yoga Vashishta, which embodies the philosophy of truth. Now listen, a man of ordinary intelligence cannot grasp it. Only highly evolved people can understand it. This is a most interesting scripture. The Gita was, now Baba says, the Gita was given to Arjuna by the Lord. Krishna gave the Gita. The Guru Gita was given to Parvati by Lord Shiva. But the Yoga Vashishta is the one scripture which was given to the Lord by a devotee. A human being taught the Lord. That's very strange. It was Vashishta, who was a human being, who instructed Lord Ram. There's a very interesting story in this work. There was a seer who had two disciples. The elder was a perfect knower of Brahman. So there's a sage, he's got two disciples. This older one was a realized being. He had had a true experience of the Supreme Being, while the young one had mastered all the scriptures, but was without any direct experience, just had head knowledge. The guru was also the father of the younger disciple. So the one who was uncooked was also the son of the guru, right? One day the guru left his physical form. After the passing away of the master, the other disciple, the realized one, calmly began to perform all the various funeral rites connected with the departed, such as fire rituals, making oblations, and other offerings to the departed. But the younger disciple began to lament very loudly. And he lamented so loudly he began to disturb the peace of everyone else. As days went by and his various rituals were finishing one after another, the older disciple began to feel more and more satisfied and happy, while the younger disciple kept falling into greater misery. They have certain rituals for the, you know, yajnas, pujas for the dead and so on. Then one day the older disciple, the realized one, called his younger brother and said to him, 2 weeks have passed since our master left his body, and you're still lamenting as much as before. And when people hear your lamentations, they get very disturbed and wonder what has happened to you. What is agitating you so? Why should you get so attached? Why should you be such a victim of ignorance? He's saying, why aren't you more detached using your wisdom? The younger one said, my guru, my Babaji has passed away, and who's going to take care of me now? What is going to happen to me now? And as he uttered these words, he began to cry louder than before. The older one said, he was only one of the many fathers that you've had at different times. Here's where we get into the psychedelic movement of the Yoga Vashishta. Why should you lament so much for just one of them? Then the older disciple induced a high state of meditation in the younger. So he gave him Shaktipat. He went into a trance and asked him to find out by direct vision how many fathers he'd had from the dawn of creation until the present day, how many wives he had had, how many mothers and how many children. He asked him to find out in meditation what happened to all of them? How many of them became Brahmins, dogs, pigs? How many were born in our country and how many abroad? And we were all the foreign students sitting there. We think, yes, we must have been one of them born abroad. During meditation, this is the younger one, he saw they'd been born in many different places and he had families in each of those places. And so many people from his different families were dying and so many were being born. After he'd seen all this, the elder one put a stop to his meditation. Then he said, in this life you've known only one father. You forgot that you've had so many fathers, and you yourself have had a father, and you've been a father to many. Notice the story is like, what do? They expand your framework. When you're only attached to the events of one life, everything becomes incredibly important. You're very attached to the outcome, and very miserable if it goes wrong, and very exultant if it goes right, which it sometimes does, I guess. But if you have a wider, higher view, then these things don't affect you as much, and you rest in that peace. As the younger one heard these words, he was awakened, and he realized the truth, namely that one who's born must die, and he who dies must be reborn, while the self remains deathless, immortal, ageless all through, and this knowledge filled him with peace. You like that story? Isn't that lovely? That's like the Upanishads. Baba goes on. Baba says, you'll have to find out yourself what karma bound you to your family. But generally it can be said that people are brought together in a family relationship because of past karma. It is the samskaras. The old connections, the tendencies, which are responsible for our different connections in the present birth. The soul takes birth in so many different forms. In one birth, it may be born in one form, in another birth, in a different place or form. In the course of this journey of the soul, there may come the auspicious moment when it becomes aware of its own true nature, of its relationship with its Lord, and then it merges into its own source. Isn't that the hair on your head, though? So over the course of many lifetimes, wandering in ignorance and wonder and wish and desire, fear and insecurity and, you know, wanting and so on, there comes a moment, well, first there comes a moment where you realize what the game is about. And then there comes a moment when you become aware of your own true nature. And then you merge in the source. You become one with the self. Baba says, if you're doing your sadhana properly, then your family will not be able to affect it adversely. And if your sadhana is strong, then you'll be able to affect your family by your enthusiasm and dedication. If, however, the family is stronger than you, then the family will affect you. We often find that after just one member of a family comes, the others are also drawn here, and even friends and acquaintances. Residents of the same place may be strongly affected. And from time to time, we've been receiving the sisters, aunts, and mothers of seekers here. That is the power of sadhana. That's the power of spiritual practice. That's Baba's answer. How's that? So make your sadhana stronger, and it will overcome all those issues. Very inspiring, very beautiful. That's why I had to put that in. But because of that, we'll have to do another Yoga Vashishta program. Next week? No. No, maybe not. I would do it, but then all my coaches would say, no, Swamiji. You can't do it. So let's see, it's happening already. You like that story?
Yeah.
Devi Ma brought her family here, everyone. Practically all your family came here. Mm-hmm. Mother, two sisters, brother. What? Two brothers? Oh, yeah, two brothers, yeah. Fantastic.
They all died here, though.
Well, I didn't want to say that. It happens.
Except for two.
What?
Except for two, yeah.
Yeah. So should we meditate? Isn't it very psychedelic, isn't it? It's like, whoa. It expands the frame of reference. And it's beautiful to think outside the box and the box and the box and the box. And remember the biggest, biggest picture. And then you attain that peace and that bliss. So let's meditate. And we meditate on the deathless, immortal soul that's within every one of us. And we should get to know that completely and directly and be able to dwell in it and take refuge in it. And from that place, we can treat the world with great happiness and great love, and great kindness, and great compassion. So, once again, with great love and respect, I welcome you all with all my heart. Satguru Nath. We'll meditate for 10 minutes.